far is it? 6'9" shooting at you. Shoot the 30.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is a show for Friday, September 18th, 2009, our 50th episode extravaganza, guys. It's a big show for us. I'm your host, Adam Barry, and joining me today are three football writers looking forward to singing Rocky Top all night long this weekend. We got Mike DeFerdinando.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Kyle Maestri.
I heard Lane Kiffin called Al Davis, see if he get his old job back.
And Mike McCall.
Yo, Adam, I'm really happy for you. I'm going to let you finish, but the College Hockey Podcast is the greatest of all time. All time.
They're 99 right now. We're not in the top 100.
We're not?
No, we fell out.
Oh, this is outrageous.
You guys out there need to download us 2 or 3 times each, and then we can get back up in the top 100.
I don't care if you listen, just download.
The top 100 is a sham.
It's very cyclical. We were featured on iTunes yesterday, and today we're not in the top
100. We've been as high as, like, what, high 20s?
Yeah, we've been almost in the top 25, I think.
And then we just drop out. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand.
I mean, there's no sense. There's no rhyme or reason to it. The important thing is that you keep listening, and then, you know, good things can only come from that. But obviously, we got a lot to talk about today, 50th episode extravaganza and so on. And it's perfectly timed with the Tennessee game, which, by the way, is perfect because in our first ever podcast, the first topic we ever talked about was Lane Kiffin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Yeah. It was about Lane Kiffin and Newkeese Richardson at the time because it was a couple days after National Signing Day.
Wow.
Look how far we've come, listeners. Look how far we've come. We're still talking about Tennessee. So let's just break this game down real quick. I'm assuming we don't think Tennessee has much of a chance here. But, McCall, just talk about Tennessee and what they're going to bring in the swamp this Saturday.
Like Urban Meyer said this week, there's no secret what Tennessee's game plan is going to be. And it's going to be to line up and pound the ball and just run. They've got Montario Hardesty and Bryce Brown at running back, who are both pretty good. They could get the job done. Although the last couple years when Tennessee has come in here, they've gotten outrushed like 591 yards to 188 or something crazy like that. I believe they were held to negative 11 yards a couple years ago. It's been bad for them every year trying to run the ball because they haven't had a quarterback recently who's been able to be efficient throwing the ball. I mean, Eric Ainge was kind of that, but not really. Jonathan Crompton sucks. And he's
right.
the problem for Tennessee, the big problem is going to be if they can't establish the run early, which they're probably not going to, they're going to end up in passing situations on third down. Then the Gators are going to run the Joker package we all love so much. Jonathan Crompton's going to be pressured from every side. He's a really mistake-prone quarterback. He's already thrown 5 picks this year. He might throw 3 more on Saturday if he gets into those situations and get pressured a lot. So the guys to look for, Gerald Brown is their most talented playmaker on offense. He's a receiver. He's coming off an ankle injury, but he also has a wrist injury, so he may be limited Saturday. Not really sure what's going to happen with him yet. So it's going to fall on a bunch of young guys, really. Quentin Hancock, who actually played high school ball with Brandon James and Jacques Rickerson in St. Augustine. Rickerson, I guess, not a factor anymore.
Not so important.
Also, Marsalis Teague, who is a recruit that had also committed to Florida, along with Newkeese Richardson. They both swung from Florida to Tennessee. So all those guys will be on the field, but they're pretty young and inexperienced. And they also don't have a quarterback who's very accurate. Oh, and the offensive line has tons of injuries. Starting center is hurt. They're starting 2 guards are hurt. And their backup center is actually a really interesting story. Josh McNeil, he's had, I believe, 3 or 4 knee surgeries. And after this last one, they told him he needs to stop playing football or he might not be able to walk later on in life. Mm. And he made a split-second decision, like, I think the night of the UCLA game, that he was going to come back and keep playing. So he might play on Saturday. That's like a really cool story. I think Josh McNeil is a real fighter. He was actually, I think, like a freshman All-American or something. He was really good, and all these injuries have really taken a toll on him.
Yeah, Jonathan Crompton's like the Jake Delhomme of college quarterbacks at this point. He could throw 5 interceptions Saturday, and it wouldn't really surprise me that much, especially
bat an eye.
Especially if he's got no protection from this just completely injury-riddled offensive line, and, you know, if they can't establish a running game, which they haven't been able to do for years now against Florida. I don't know. Do we expect Tennessee having any offensive success at all? And if not, can they do anything on defense to slow the Florida attack?
I mean, Tennessee's one, like, strong point is they do have a pretty talented defense. You have Eric Berry back there, the safety. They have a pretty good, like, front seven. So there's a chance that they could slow Florida down a little bit on offense, but they don't have anywhere near the offense to keep up with Florida's.
There's no chance that they do anything on offense. Like, I think it's just going to look really ugly because Florida's already a team that's always very good against the run. Whenever they give up a lot of yards, it seems like it comes through the passing game. You know, they've had a few games in the last couple of years like that. But there's no chance Crompton can do anything like that, especially with the receivers and line that he has. So I just expect it to be real ugly. They're going to load up the box, try to dare him to throw, and probably force a couple turnovers.
And the obvious thing here is how much more, you know, motivated is this team against a Tennessee than they were against a Charleston Southern, where, like you said, they gave up a couple of passing yards, you know, pretty decent passing game by that random quarterback from Charleston Southern. But how much more motivated are they in this game to just, you know, keep those numbers at a minimum?
Well, I mean, Kiffin did the worst thing possible for getting a win. If you want to try to get a win at the Swamp, you got to try to kind of sneak in, fly under the radar, play your best game quietly, hope Florida makes some mistakes, doesn't really get up and play their best game. But there's no question that they're going to be super motivated, play as hard as they can, and just look to embarrass them out there. That's the goal, is just to completely clown them and send them home after a beating.
The problem with Tennessee, like, Tennessee already can never come in here under the radar because it's a rivalry game, and you look at the stats for the SEC East, these two teams have represented the East in the SEC title game 14 out of 17 years. The winner of this game has gone on to take the division 10 out of 17 years. It's the tone setter for the season. It's the real season opener. I don't care what they say when they're being politically correct about Charleston Southern was the real, you know, season opener. It's not. This is it. This is where the season really starts, because they preach all offseason about how much winning the SEC means to them. This is where that starts right now, and it's a rivalry game. Then you throw on top of it what Kiffin said, and it's ridiculous, like, how much motivation there's going to be for this game. There are, I mean, they've always held Tennessee up, like, as a motivational game and something that they worked toward all offseason thinking about the Tennessee game, and this just made it way worse for Tennessee.
Well, with the way they've beaten them the last 2 years and the team success they've had, and their goals are obviously much higher than the SEC regardless of what they say, I feel like it's a chance where they don't get up for a game like Tennessee or Florida State or Georgia. Just maybe Georgia's because they beat them recently, but Tennessee and FSU, I mean, they've just whooped them the last few years. I don't feel like they take them as seriously as they used to. But, you know, with something like this happening, obviously they will, and obviously they're going to play their hardest and probably destroy them, because the talent level is, the discrepancy in talent level is huge.
A lot of people talk about, you know, what can they do to, you know, quote-unquote embarrass them. It's like when Urban called the timeouts against Mark Richt. Have you guys thought about this at all? Is that something Urban might do against this just because of how emotionally involved?
Here's what I'd like for him to do. Okay. This is another one of my outrageous things. And I need him to do this because I picked Tennessee to cover the spread.
Indian style around the pitcher's mound.
Oh, you know what? You guys all laughed at me for that. Satchel Paige did that on multiple occasions. He had his infielders play cards in the infield while he struck people out.
That had to be in the Negro leagues.
No. I believe it was in it was one of the barnstorming leagues where he got into. It was like the white leagues, but it was like good baseball players in it.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah,
I meant to tell you guys that this summer. Now here's what I want him to do. Florida takes the ball, opening kickoff, goes down and scores. Right, for the rest of the game, all they do is force three and outs, drive to Tennessee's five, and take a knee three times. They just keep driving the ball into Tennessee territory, kneeling, and then stopping them three and out. They win the game 7-0. Tennessee finishes with, like, negative yards. That's like, the most humiliating thing I think you could possibly do.
That's ridiculous.
Florida bettors will be very upset if that were to happen. But, when I said embarrass them, I only meant, like, with their play. Mm. I don't think the players are going to do anything obnoxious. But I could see Meyer pulling some kind of stunt. But what I think you should do is just get guys who should never be scoring a touchdown in this game touchdowns like you would in, like, the crappy, like, homecoming game or, like, you know, the opening two games where Cade Holliday's catching touchdowns. So just get, like, the walk-ons that, like, run it in from the one-yard line. That's, I think, the best way you can embarrass them.
You know what I want to see? I want to see Andrew Blaylock throw a pass.
I don't know who that is.
He's the third-string guy. They brought him in after John Brantley, like, when there's, like, 12 seconds left in the game, just to take a snap and take the knee. I want to see him throw a pass, much less complete one. That'd just be amazing.
All right, I'm going completely different. I say you leave the starters in the entire game. I say you try to score as many points as humanly possible. If you can hit 100, do it. Century mark. There's no bigger, like, revenge in scoring 100 points on an SEC team.
I would love to see that. I just think it's really stupid. Yeah. Like, you're going to have to answer for somebody getting hurt in the fourth quarter if that were to happen while the score is 80-10 or something like that. I think they should take that risk.
They can do
80-0, my bad.
Hey, there's a chance they could score 100 with the backups. Brantley's going to score
100. There's zero chance they could even get to above 70 against Tennessee. I don't care how good they play, or if they lead the starters in all game, or how bad Tennessee plays. This isn't like a 1AA team. That's like, there's no way that happens.
I think if they lead the starters in the whole time, they could get to 70. They can't get to 100. No way.
I mean, if they lead the starters in and, you know, keep up that aggressive mentality the whole time, just bombing the ball downfield.
If their goal is to score 70, I think they could do it. Like, if that's like what they're going to be graded on and what they've been talking about the whole week, then I think they could possibly accomplish that.
I mean, they've just been thinking about 3rd and 6, man. That's what they've been thinking about. That's what they've been game planning.
Watching
game planning for. Watch film.
I agreed with what Bobby said in his column this week that you're going to see it in the second half, and I think you'll see something like Brandon Spikes punting the ball into the stands last year. It'll be something like that. That's the way that the players will humiliate them, and it's more of in, like, a celebratory manner. They're not going to, like, sack Jonathan Crompton and then, like, dance over him or something.
Right.
Like, they don't do stuff like that, but they'll do some kind of outrageous celebration that's like, okay, it's over.
How long do you think the starters stay in this week, though?
I think they're going to play all the way into the fourth quarter, like, more than halfway into the fourth quarter.
I agree. Fourth quarter.
It depends on the score.
Yeah.
It just depends on how many points they're at.
What wouldn't surprise me too much is for them to, you know, if it's out of hand or they're still, you know, it's still in that, you know, middle of the third quarter thing, is take out Tebow, take out Hernandez, put in Brantley with the rest of the starters, you know, let him throw with the first team. You can still score points that way, and the game's not out of hand, but it's, you know, you're taking out the two guys you want to keep
the most
healthy.
This is the first game of the year, like, for all intents and purposes. Like, this is the time to get everybody in there and play a full game together and see what you've got. So this isn't the time to be, like, pulling people out in the third quarter or anything. I mean, I think even when they won 59-20 here 2 years ago, the starters were in pretty much the whole way. I know Tebow came out, like, real late, but I think, did he finish the game? Did he run the last drive? I think he might have, because I remember there being a lot of questions afterward, and they're like, oh, you know, we're just practicing. Like, it's his first year as a starter.
Mm.
So, I mean, they're well within their rights to. They should be able to play the starters the whole game if they want to. They probably won't need to, but... I wouldn't pull them out. Like,
you can do whatever you want. You have no responsibility to the other team. They need to stop you if they're feeling embarrassed.
Yeah.
They're especially, like, this is a conference game against a rival. There's no crying about, like, sportsmanship or anything like that, for running up the score. You stop the other team if you don't want to run up the score.
Yeah.
I just think if they're up by 50 points, there's no reason to risk an injury to one of your best players in the fourth quarter.
What's a reasonable, let's do, I guess, minimum and maximum points each team will score. I don't know if you guys have thought about this at all. So let's start with McCall.
Okay.
Still a little eeny, meeny, miny, mo there.
You go team by team here?
Minimum for Tennessee
yeah.
is going to be zero, obviously. Maximum, I think, 21. Mm-hmm. And one of those is going to have to come on defense or special teams. I don't see the offense scoring more than two touchdowns. And then Florida, maximum, I'm going to say 59, what they put on Tennessee 2 years ago, and minimum 24.
All right. Minimum for Tennessee, zero. Maximum, I'm going to go 14, and one of those touchdowns will probably have to come on defense or special teams. Florida, maximum, I don't know.
Guys, limit
77, was that 11 touchdowns?
Yeah.
77. And minimum 30. I know that's a very big range, but
yeah.
I can see anything
cast
happening.
Cast a wide net.
Yeah.
All right, deeper.
All right, obviously, the Tennessee minimum is zero. I think they could score, like, 24 points, something
what?
Like that.
Wow.
What?
You guys are forgetting, like, if Florida makes a mistake in the red zone, which they do, they make plenty of mistakes on offense, it's not that hard to capitalize.
24 points?
Yeah.
And how many of those
points? Especially 24 points.
For the game. Especially if Florida takes out their starters and they're playing against weaker competition late, they can get a touchdown late.
This is ridiculous.
I don't think it's out of the realm. I think you could see, like, maybe a 14-point, like, first half maybe for Tennessee. Then maybe they get one, like, cheap touchdown
late. They scored 24 points the last 2 years combined.
Right.
You gave them 120 minutes out there.
They scored 15 against UCLA.
UCLA at home.
Well, he makes a good point that
if the backups come in, it changes everything because then you're going against a weaker defense.
All right, that's fine.
Florida, how much?
All right, Florida, I don't know, minimum in the 30s to 40s for the minimum.
Give me a number, deeper.
Minimum.
Give me a number. Say 35. I don't care.
35.
There you go.
And then I think the max, I'll go as high as 100. They can score as many as they want to.
Jesus. Oh, man. Defense sets the bar high.
Then I'll say over 70.
Okay. I mean, I'd want a number, but sure. All right. I'll go with mine then. Again, the minimum, Tennessee is zero. I don't know how likely it is, but I'm going to say that's definitely on the board.
I'm predicting it. Shutout this week.
Look forward to
that. In our pool, I'm picking zero.
There won't be a shutout. They won't get a shutout.
And then I'd say the maximum for them is 17. I think that's a pretty good number. You get, an Eric Berry pick six. The offense stumbles into a touchdown on accident, and they get a field goal. That's pretty realistic.
Yeah. You do have a pretty good kicker, right? Daniel Lincoln. He's pretty good.
I feel like he's been around forever.
Yeah, he's one of those.
Maybe a couple field goals then.
And I'm pulling him up. Let's see.
All right, also, watch out for the new Keith Richardson punt return at some point in the game.
From Ocala.
Ah, there you go.
Lincoln. Huh.
And I'll say Florida's minimum, I'll say 38. And then Florida's maximum, I'm going to say 73. So I don't know how likely this is. Do we actually think that a shutout is, like, likely, or just it's on the board at this point?
I'm not saying likely. I wouldn't say it's likely to happen at all. But I'm going with that. I think that's their goal. I think they're going into this trying their hardest to shut them out.
I think it's very unlikely. I think it's possible, but I'd be very surprised.
Yeah.
It's definitely on the board and one of those things they could do to easily embarrass Tennessee. I mean, shutting out Tennessee is, I don't even know if that's happened. between Florida and Tennessee. I'll look that up as we talk. But that would be quite a feat, as far as I'm concerned. I don't see it happening.
I think it's likely they score single digits, though. Very likely.
Yeah. I mean, the defense is going to be more aggressive this game than they have been in the past. They were a little bit more in Troy with the Joker package and everything. How much more are you going to see out of the defense in terms of opening up the playbook, especially?
I mean, they'll have everything. They're going to send out everything they possibly can to embarrass Tennessee and hold them to, like, nothing.
I mean, the whole thing that they did last, the Joker package, and that's like throwing the book at them. Like, you have so much movement. It's so hard to prepare for that. You have blitzes coming from everywhere. You have so much speed and talent on the field. I mean, that's the best thing they can do on defense as far as I'm concerned. And one thing that'll be interesting to watch this week is they've talked about, Meyer disagreed with that this week, but I don't believe him, that he said the Joker package is, like, totally effective against the run. They don't know that yet because they haven't done that yet. So the whole thing with that is, since you have so many guys flying around and hitting different gaps, if two guys go through the same gap, one's wide open, you're susceptible to a big play. You have linebackers moving around in pass coverage. You have corners blitzing in. Like, the help isn't where it normally is. So that's one thing I'd like to see them do is run that and try and stop the run with it this week, because that'll be a valuable tool looking forward. Because if they can stop the run effectively in that package, that's absurd. Like, they're going to cause a lot of problems with that defense.
Is that their base package at this point? Are we buying into that?
It's still like for passing. If they play a team that is predicated on throwing the ball, like I believe Troy was for the most part, like what Oklahoma was last year, it was their base defense against Oklahoma because Oklahoma is there to throw the ball. So you're going to do that against teams that throw the ball. That's your base defense, but normally no.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view because Tennessee's going to run the ball, and if they were actually concerned with Tennessee beating them, I think they would not play the Joker that much. But they may be so unconcerned with Tennessee beating them that they're actually going to just run the Joker against it just to see if they can stop the run in the package, which is interesting. I actually think I kind of like that theory. But until they establish a lead or until they feel safe, I think you might see them go back to the 4-3 mostly so they can stop the run, load up the box with eight guys.
1994, Florida beat Tennessee 31-0.
There you go. That's why you come to this.
Also,
this thing we do.
1954, Florida beat Tennessee 14-0. Also, series history tied 19-all. Florida can take the lead for the first time ever.
That's right.
That means Florida shut out Tennessee 1/19th of the times that they've played.
Nice.
Likely.
Nice math. Great math.
It's bound to happen again.
I just want to point out that if Florida somehow does lose this game, this should be the worst loss in the history of the Florida program, I think. Armageddon. This would be unbelievable.
Because, one, they're awesome. Like, they're a really good team. And, two, like, losing to Ole Miss, you can kind of, like, write off as, like, oh, they weren't ready.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, become a more acceptable thing than, like, oh, you showed up to a huge rivalry game with all the motivation in the world and just floundered.
Also, Ole Miss is kind of good. Last year's Ole Miss team, way better than this year's Tennessee team.
Yeah.
And just the implications of, like, oh, God, like Lane Kiffin, like, after the game, that would be
He would literally sing Rocky Top all night long.
There's no amount of money that I wouldn't pay to be in that press conference live after Kiffin, if Kiffin were to beat Florida this weekend. Now, luckily, I think I have the assignment of writing a Kiffin story on Saturday, so I'm really looking forward to seeing him, like, crushed in the gym.
I mean, if Tennessee wins, I'm just going to do what I want to do, regardless of my assignments or any paper, and go to the Lane Kiffin press conference. That'd be incredible.
I bet you he's super complimentary of Florida, like he has been for the most part.
I mean, he has been this entire week, right? Like,
except there was one thing. Let's talk about that for a minute. You didn't talk about that on the last podcast.
No, but we talked about the press release that is going to be mentioned here, despite not knowing about the implications.
So this week, Lane Kiffin's press conference, he's praising Florida again, praising Urban Meyer, talking about how they have 11 defensive players. having 11 defensive starters who could all end up playing in the NFL. But then someone asked him about Newkeese Richardson. That's the Pahokee receiver who was a longtime Florida commit and is now at Tennessee. Asked him about one more time about how he got him. And he said, you know, the only way I see Florida losing recruits in the future is that receivers don't want to play in the spread because it hurts their NFL future. Coincidentally, a few hours later, Florida puts out this press release, Gators in the NFL Week 1, that's supposed to be just about, you know, what ex-Florida players did in the NFL. I don't think they've even done this press release the last couple of years. I've never seen it before. But anyway, it pretty much leads off with Lewis Murphy and Andre Caldwell, who had big weeks for the Raiders and the Bengals, also Percy Harvin. And then it has a chart of listing college programs in order of how many receivers they've had drafted since, like, 2005, which is when Meyer took over. And Florida's tied for first with 6, with Ohio State, I believe, and then Tennessee has 1. And Georgia has 1, and FSU has, like, 2. So they're just, like,
they just throw in the teams at the end that just have 1. It's, like, seemingly
this
random.
This whole thing was pretty much aimed at Lane Kiffin. And then also, one thing you never see, we cover these press conferences with Urban Meyer every day after practice, and when it's over, he's out. He is not answering another question. And yesterday it was one of those deals where it was like, okay, there's one more question, and that question was asked, and then someone asked him about, like, receivers in the NFL, that question. And he would normally be like, see you guys, have a good one. But he stopped and talked for, like, 30 seconds, which is actually a really long time, on this thing about, like, oh, you know, you see the success that our guys have had in the NFL. Like, it's really great to see. Like, not even, like, it saying, like, oh, man, Lane Kiffin's a jerk for saying that. Just, like, I'm so proud of them. They're so awesome. All our receivers do so well in the NFL. Like, oh, just all this stuff over and over again. He's like, yeah, that's what I just don't understand, you know. Sometimes people say stuff like that, or it's just not true. Like, this really bothers him. I love Lane because he really knows how to get under their skin.
Yeah, and it's proven to be effective because, you know, like, the whole thing has been about Lane Kiffin and proving him wrong. It's not about beating Tennessee at this point. It's about beating Lane Kiffin.
The theory we heard at SEC Media Days about why Lane Kiffin was such an idiot in the offseason, this is what he said, and this is what, you know, his players said. They knew this was going on the whole time, is that, like, he took over a program that had nothing going for it at the time. Like, everything was bad. Everything was down. And he was trying to get the name out there and, like, really go after it in recruiting. So this was the best way to project the image and also get some fan support behind him, which he may have to pay. He may lose all that in this weekend. So do we all, like, agree with that? Like, that was a smart – I don't know if smart's the word. I understand where he's coming from with that.
I mean, I kind of like the move in terms of getting fans behind him to a certain extent, you know, raising awareness of the program. Like, he has managed to hype this game up as the biggest game of the weekend, despite the fact that it's going to be, like, a 40-point blowout. In that regard, it's somewhat of a success, because he has people caring about his program. He has eyes on his program now.
You don't often see games with, like, a 28.5-point spread being hyped as one of the best of the weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he was definitely a success. I mean, people are talking about Tennessee now, whether you think they're going to, you know, beat or not. If kids are excited to see Tennessee play, maybe even go to Tennessee. There's billboards in South Florida with Eric Berry's face all over them. I mean, I think he did a pretty good job.
I mean, eventually you just have to win. None of this really matters in the long run. Like, it's all cool for now, whatever. Maybe brought in a couple more recruits, but, like, it just all comes down to winning. If you win, then people will come to your school, respect your school, watch your school. If you don't win, then they won't. So he gets a free pass this year. He can get the crap beat out of him for the whole season. Nobody will really care. And then, you know, 2-3 years down the road, he'll have to eventually start winning games. And that's when we'll know if Lane Kiffin was successful or not.
That's the thing. If he doesn't start winning games in 2 to 3 years, like, these, you know, these comments he made in the offseason just make his fall, like, that much harder.
Right.
Like, you can see the montage of them playing the clips. And
right,
then, like,
exactly.
A graphic with, like, you know,
Lane
terrible
Kiffin
losing
was dismissed
record
by Tennessee today. Yeah.
And they replay those clips and so on and so forth. Let's talk a little bit about the rivalry as a whole. Defer, you're all up in the history of this rivalry. Just talk a little bit about that, some famous moments in the past and everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great moments in the history of Florida-Tennessee going back through my childhood particularly. It was always a big game in my household growing up. There's been some, like, really great controversies over the years of Florida-Tennessee. I mean, dating back to the early 90s, there was a situation where I think it was 91 – And a former assistant at Tennessee faxed then defensive coordinator Ron Zook Tennessee's playbook the week of the Florida-Tennessee game. And they eventually proved it by there was, like, a slip or something at a Kinko's.
It was like a receipt or something.
Receipt for the fax in Nashville at a Kinko's. There was the Jabbar Gaffney throat slash, which I love so much. There's a lot of great moments in the rivalry.
Can't spell citrus without UT.
And then the next year.
And then the next year, Florida played in the Citrus Bowl, and Tennessee paid to have a plane fly overhead with a banner that says, Tennessee welcomes the University of Florida to the Citrus Bowl.
A young Mike DeFerdinand.
I was in the stands for that. It was funny. It's a lot of great moments in this rivalry.
So yeah, there you go. And it's, like, it's got a history of being, like, kind of a contentious, you know, ridiculous rivalry this year. Certainly.
So
no,
we can hope that.
That
even if the game's, like, way out of control tomorrow, that maybe someone does something really stupid. Maybe there's something crazy that happens. Maybe Tennessee flies a plane over the swamp, or someone gets throat slashed, or whatever.
Well, I'm on record as saying I don't feel like this rivalry is as big of a deal as the other two. But one thing I give this rivalry and I respect is that it's been very, very close over time, obviously. As close as possible. It's 19 wins apiece. So at least you've had a good balance of who beats who. And, you know, in recent, you know, the last 15 years or so, it's had implications. But I just don't think the history is the same as the Georgia game or the FSU game. And that kind of takes away from it a little bit for me. But it's been much more competitive than Georgia has lately, obviously. So I respect that about this game.
Yeah, to your point of how close it's been, let me read off some of the scores from 96 on. 35-29, Florida. Tennessee 20, Florida 17. Florida 23, Tennessee 21. 27-23, 34-32. 30-28, 21-20. Like, this, some extremely close
yeah.
games.
Yeah, they play good games. Absolutely.
Right. Here's why the Tennessee game is a bigger game for Florida than Georgia is. I'll give you Florida State's the best rivalry in Florida has. But here's why Tennessee's bigger than Georgia. Because Florida fans don't really hate Georgia. It's a great rivalry. Everyone goes to Jacksonville and drinks and, like, hangs out with Georgia fans after the game. But Florida fans hate Tennessee fans, and Tennessee fans hate Florida fans. The level of bitterness and hatred makes it, like, far superior.
I disagree. I think a lot of people hate Georgia.
I've said this a lot. I think that's really, really fake hatred from being at the Florida-Georgia game a lot and at the tailgates. Like, the conversations between those people, it's
friendly.
Like, it is friendly.
All right, well,
people are going home with girls from Georgia afterwards. I mean,
and these people end up, like, working together because they're both on par academically. Like, these people end up, like, co-workers more often than
not. In my 4 years here, I've heard, like, tenfold the amount of people talk about how much they hate Georgia as compared to how much they hate Tennessee. I don't hear anyone talk about how much they hate Tennessee.
I talk about
how much we love Tennessee and Bruce Pearl and, like, their school, and a lot of people feel that.
The only reason it's been like that over the last 4 years is because Georgia's been much better than Tennessee in the last 4 years while we've been in school. If Tennessee would have been good these last 4 years, it would have been completely different.
I think that's right, too. I think, like, from the broader, like, looking at the broader perspective of it, like, I've said this a lot. Like,
I think the broader you guys go, the worse your argument is, because Georgia has a rich, rich history that goes back twice as long as Tennessee does.
We're talking, though, about, like, the personal, there's not that much interaction between Florida and Tennessee fans, especially not like there is between Florida and Georgia fans, and I think that's become a more friendly rivalry. Now, you're right that, or whoever Deefer said, like, you know, Georgia's been a lot better in the last 4 years, but if you look past that into the competitiveness between Florida and Tennessee in the past, the whole, like, Peyton Manning never beating Florida thing. Like, there's a lot.
This goes all the way back to when Steve Spurrier was in high school, and he chose to go to Florida instead of staying home and going to Tennessee. Florida fans, or Tennessee fans, have hated Florida since then. It goes way back.
They didn't even play each other back then.
It's not about that. It's about Spurrier went to Florida instead of Tennessee.
All right,
the rivalry, arguably, not as much of a big deal, and they didn't play like that. But the hatred, I guess you could make
the
argument. When
did Spurrier play?
There.
In the 60s?
Yeah, 64, 66.
Yeah, they played in 69, and then they started playing regularly throughout, like, the 70s and 80s.
At the time, that would have been the equivalent of Tim Tebow, like, leaving and going to Tennessee. Like, the best player in the
state. They didn't play
state.
Each other. Spurrier wasn't playing against him every year. It's not the same thing. It would be like him going to Ohio State or something. They may play each other every once in a while, but they're not playing every year.
You're still seeing it's just about seeing someone like from your state become a legend at another school. And like it's a retroactive thing too. Like you think about it now that like one of the biggest Gator greats is from Tennessee. I mean that sucks if you're from Tennessee.
That's fine, but it's definitely not the same thing as Tebow going to Tennessee and then beating Florida every year.
No, you're right. It's like Tebow going to Ohio State,
right.
Like going to another school, but you'd still hate Ohio State.
Right. Yeah, I don't know the dates. Did they really not play back then?
Yes.
They were in the same conference.
They played 38 games.
They played more in the 50s, and then they only played once in the 60s, and then they played four times in the 70s, and then the 80s.
Was that not a conference game back then?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about the future of the rivalry then. We talked about the past. Kyle, you wrote a column talking about, I believe, the cyclical nature of rivalries.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I was hoping to get the play. I should have got the players on this, but I didn't come up with the idea until yesterday, and we only get Meyer on Thursdays. And I asked him a couple questions. He pretty much clowned me in front of everyone. I asked him, you know, what do you think about the notion that rivalries are cyclical and that, you know, Florida can't stay on top forever. And he's like, I think about 3rd and 6 on Saturday, watching film. I don't think about that kind of stuff. Like, while, like, really, like, the biggest mocking smile on his face of all time. So then later on, I still had the balls to ask him, you know, is he at all surprised by the success that he's had against Tennessee and Georgia? And he was like, I don't think about that. No. Like, you're asking me a whole bunch of questions today I don't think about. Which is funny because he has time to think about his Gators in the NFL and getting back at Kiffin through a press release, but not the nature of the rivalries.
He's already thinking about what he's running on 3rd and 6, man.
But anyway, my point was that, you know, eventually, I don't know how far off into the future, this could be 3 years from now, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years from now. Florida's probably not going to be the top dog anymore, and certainly all three of the schools that they've been beating up on won't stay down for much longer. You know, it's only a matter of time before Florida at least has to try again in these type games. And I was just kind of saying, you know, fans and Meyer should be careful what they do now, because later on it's going to be them who is getting stomped on, you know, and people are calling timeouts against them and stuff like that.
You could even say what goes around comes around.
You could say that. You could. But yeah, also in my fan days, I remember I actually went to the LSU game 2 years ago, and I remember being very upset after that loss at the time. And there were a few LSU fans who were very, very nice to Florida fans after the game and complimented them, said how good Tim Tebow was, how they don't want to play them again in the SEC championship game. I just remember being very grateful for that and thinking how nice they were. And I just feel like it's cool. All the crap talking before the game and stuff is cool. I like that kind of atmosphere. But afterwards, you know, be a little respectful after you just beat the crap out of another team.
Yeah. That's so opposite of my experience in Baton Rouge. It's not even funny. The people that I saw were like the most hateful, awful people I've ever come across.
Ever.
Like just cruel adults. Also, adults and children.
Little kids coming up. They're women in the shins.
A little girl drove by in a car, leaned out the window, and flicked off a group of Florida fans. She couldn't have been older than 8. Like it was just a hateful place. My theory on that is that you never get out of Louisiana, so you don't interact with other people enough. So you don't lessen the hate at all.
Wow, so
I'll have another chance to test that theory this year.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on to our weekly Gator guarantees. Obviously, we'll be making them about the game this weekend. All right, we'll start with McCall. Start us off with your Gator guarantee.
Jump pass touchdown from Tim Tebow.
Nice.
Hernandez. Also, I think I've made a guarantee with him before, and he's always let me down. Emmanuel Moody scores a touchdown. They want to get his confidence back up after the fumble debacle.
You definitely
want to
stay off the Moody train when you're making your guarantees.
Phil fell victim to that last week. He did not lead the team in rushing, despite what Phil guaranteed.
I'm
going to
stick with it. I guarantee a touchdown for Emmanuel Moody.
All right.
I love the jump pass prediction.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, I'm going to go on the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to guarantee Tennessee gets shut out in the swamp. Ooh. And I'm also going to guarantee that the Gators get their first defensive touchdown of the season on scoop and score. Scoop and score. No pick sixes here.
Is this when Lorenzo Edwards gets Ed McCall?
No.
That comes later.
And then that'll bring the season total to Gators off defense plus special teams 2, opponents 0. So I'll still be ahead in that one, too.
All right, Deeper.
All right, well, we're going to show a little love for Tennessee and the Tennessee defense. I think Eric Berry, Tennessee's great safety, shows a lot of pride this weekend despite a loss. I think he has double-digit tackles and gets a pick off of Tebow.
It's a huge game.
Yeah. Does he play on offense, Deeper?
I think he will play on offense. I think he makes one or two big plays, either first downs or, like,
goodness
long
gracious
runs.
They're going to hand him the Heisman Trophy after Saturday with this performance.
Just an epic game all
it's
around.
Possible.
He's going to be the MVP. He leads them to a 40-point loss. That'll be the headline.
Like, all I said is he's going to play with pride.
Barry leads Balls to a 40-point loss.
Enters Heisman race. All right, I'll make mine. Mine's not multi-parts like y'all's is. I'm going to say that Brandon James will score 2 touchdowns. Brandon James historically plays very well against Tennessee. I think, last year he had a return for a touchdown. And now that he's a wide receiver, I think he's much more likely.
Last 2 years, I think he had a return for a touchdown.
Oh, wow. All right. And I'd say he's much more likely to get 2 this year now that he's lining up at receiver as well. I think he catches like a less than 10-yard little dump pass from Tebow in the end zone because, you know, nobody will be guarding
nobody
him at the time.
See him.
He slips under the defense.
He doesn't make another over-the-shoulder diving catch.
Oh, he crawls under Carl Johnson's legs and just pops out the other side.
All right, and let's make our official score predictions for this Saturday's game as well. Let's go back to McCall.
Okay, I took Tennessee to cover the 30-point spread, so I'm going to say 38-10. I think it's a real slow, kind of plodding game. Not a whole lot happens, but everybody goes home happy.
All right, Kyle?
All right, I'm going to say 56-0. So it's the same game you've seen the last 2 weeks, just a methodical drubbing of Tennessee.
I think 63-24. I think Tennessee shows a little more on offense than everyone thinks.
A lot of points.
I can't 24. Wait. Don't sit next to me during this game.
Who's going to score their touchdown? Seriously.
It's 87 points that are going to be scored in the swamp.
It's
going to
happen.
This is more points than they would have scored off that 2007 defense, which was mediocre at best.
Yeah, bad at worst.
Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens.
Good. Don't be near me tomorrow.
This is your prediction, you guys.
I realize. This is my prediction.
Answer this question. Who's going to score their touchdowns?
I think the two running backs can score. I think you bring Barry and maybe he gets a touchdown. I don't know, man. Things happen. Turnovers, maybe a pick.
I'm not even mad. It's just funny at this
point.
He's grasping.
I'm gonna run this in so bad when it happens.
You have every right.
I'm gonna go insane.
He said win.
If they score 20 points, or 24 points, you have every right to rub it in my face. But it's not gonna happen. So it doesn't matter.
All right, I'll make my score prediction. I'm gonna say it's 63-10. Florida, obviously. Florida's going to take 63-10. I'll say Tebow stays in until the fourth quarter this time. I do think they take him out this year. unlike last year.
I do have to say part of the reason why I picked it so close, because I believe in the spring when we had our first podcast, I predicted that Tennessee would have the best chance of upsetting Florida.
Did you really?
Anyone this year? Yeah. Took a lot of crap for it, deservedly so, because after watching them against UCLA, they're not good. I just think their defense can slow the game down enough, you know, to keep it fairly competitive.
I'm not going to totally rule that out. I could see it going 30-0 instead.
Yeah. And it's plus whether or not, you know, whether or not they do want to run it up, whether or not Urban wants to deal with that, you know that stigma of running up the score on the team like this when everybody knows he's just sort of doing it for vengeance.
I could see, as my range was huge for Florida's offensive points, I could see that kind of going either way, but I just don't think they do anything to score points. Tennessee does.
One thing we didn't talk about earlier, actually, that I wanted to, is how much does Florida open up the playbook on offense this week? Everything?
Yeah, a lot.
But have we, the wrinkles we've talked about, do we see them?
Here's the problem is they've been scoring on drives of like 5 plays, minute and 15 seconds. Like that's like their average drive, I would say. So they don't get to dig into the playbook. They just, you know, dump it and run it for 70 yards or Tim Tebow throws it over the top. So we'll see if Tennessee can put up a fight, then they'll get to actually, you know, run some real plays and try to do some different things on offense.
I think you see at least one or two Dem Serrani runs up the middle that break for like 50, 60 yards. Yeah. And I also think you see some of the Bonsai package.
Bonsai!
Yeah, there'll definitely be Bonsai package.
Just completely wear Tennessee's defense out. Because Tennessee's defense is like the one thing they have going for them. And if you can wear them out, sort of take them out of the game, let them become less versatile with Monty Kippen at the helm, then I think there's just no chance of Tennessee doing anything. But since this is our 50th episode extravaganza, we want to do a couple things to ring that in to celebrate and involve you, the listener. So first, let's involve us, though. Let's talk about our favorite moments from the podcast and its illustrious 50-episode history. Let's start with Defer this time.
All right, I'm going all the way, way back to our third podcast. We were on location in Adam's apartment.
That was definitely not our third podcast.
We talked about this before. Oh, that was our third podcast.
No. The one I'm going to do is our third podcast.
Whatever. I'm not sure when that was then.
It's like, anyway, all we all did the process.
Everyone knows. It's Defer.
That's me.
All right, so go ahead, explain.
I don't want to tell him now.
All right, I'll just say for Defer. At some point, we podcasted from my apartment. We all gathered around my coffee table. I believe that was not the one where we did the predictions.
This is the one where we
I coaxed him out.
McCall instituted, and it's a one and only segment. What's on TV at 3:35 a.m.
That was great fun. That's also where the Reggie Nelson and Kyle Jackson awards came from.
Yeah.
It was very fun. It was delirious almost. It was so late.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us were in our right minds, but it was really fun.
That's the thing about this podcast is that we used to do it in the spring at like 2 o'clock in the morning, just this outrageous time.
We used to start at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, we'd start at 2. I mean, I don't know how we did that at all.
Weren't
the
there NCAA tournament games that night we were watching?
Yeah, there
were. Yeah, that was Ohio State really Siena.
That was too much madness.
That was too much madness.
Kyle standing on my couch, yelling, too much madness, too much madness. All right, so Kyle, you got your
I got two favorite ones. The epic NCAA preview podcast, the Lord of the Rings of podcasts. It went for like an hour and 45 minutes. That was my favorite by far. That was probably the best, maybe the best work we've done as far as breaking something down on the podcast. And then the Oklahoma City podcast from the car. That was a lot of fun on that ridiculous drive out there.
20-hour drive. That was ridiculous. I'm just sitting in the passenger seat with headphones on and my laptop in my lap, and we're sitting there recording. I can't even imagine what that looked
like. It was like raining pretty heavily outside also. That was a lot of fun.
Highways were bumpy. We were surrounded by semis. The disaster. McCall?
I don't know which podcast it was, but whatever the first podcast was where we had feedback from a listener, which was Vince, our boy, was in New York and moved to Alaska, unfortunately. I think he may have fallen off the face of the earth.
No internet in Alaska.
Yeah, because the whole time this has been really fun, just doing what we would normally do with a microphone around us, but that was the first like clear message that someone was actually listening to us and enjoying it. So if you're out there, getting feedback means a lot. Like, it shows us that we're not just wasting our time here, that people actually do like it. A few of you have done it lately. We've had 2 iTunes reviews recently, notably Ed Spillane, who's been a wonderful listener.
Absolutely.
Friend of us all on Facebook. So that means a lot to us. If it's something you're considering doing, do it, because it'll only take you about a minute, and it means a lot to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that completely makes my day anytime we get, like, positive feedback. I haven't got a whole lot of negative feedback other than this podcast needs to be louder, which I'm working on, by the way. I like to think we've improved in the last 2 weeks, but I'll say
you should only podcast with Bobby and Phil. That would just fix the volume problem altogether.
It's when Bobby gets passionate about something, and then just when I put Phil close to the microphone, then we get good volume on the podcast, and I just sit as close as possible to it. I'll say my favorite moment was, in fact, our third podcast that we ever did. It was February 13th. We did, I don't remember what the first couple segments were, but at the end we did this special segment called the Mount Rushmore of UF sports. And it was this ridiculous debate where we all put, you know, on the all-time Mount Rushmore of UF sports, some of, you know, the best athletes and coaches or whatever who have been on it. And then we did, like, a current one. And that was a ridiculous segment and really fun to do at first. But then we had our first horrible, horrible production error, which is where my laptop, you know, just told me to go screw myself and shut off halfway through that segment. And we re-recorded it in what is arguably the hottest, most poorly ventilated room in the southeastern United States. And we literally recorded the entire, like, half segment again, repeating some of the same things we did. That's where Phil broke out the infamous I'm going to law school, baby, it all starts here argument that you can hear in the intro music. That's probably, it was sort of like the first podcast where I realized, like, we're doing something cool here. Like, I like what we're doing. So I'd say that was probably my favorite. Although I've enjoyed all of them. I mean, it's been fun doing this.
As we all have.
Yeah, I like to think so. But we're giving you an opportunity to get involved here. We have a new email address for feedback. It's podcast@alligator.org.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is epic.
It's going official now.
This is an extravaganza.
So send any official feedback you have to that. We'll answer it from there. And because we're instituting that, and because this is, as Kyle said, an extravaganza, the first one to email podcast@alligator.org with their favorite moment from the Alligator Sports Podcast will receive a free Alligator Sports Podcast t-shirt.
Currently in pre-production
phase. I'd say it's in the planning stage right now. But we will have t-shirts eventually. And if you're the first one to send an email to that address with your favorite podcast moment, we will send you one of those whenever we get them done. I'll guarantee right now, you want another Gator guarantee, we'll send that out before our 100th show. So look forward to that. And send feedback to that address. And thanks for listening.